Impact, a continuing series of talks based on modern and ancient wisdom. And here is our host, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Mission.
Beautiful subject called the Art of Love. And the question is love that needs effort or does it happen spontaneously? The fact that we have a title, The Art of Love, presupposes that to love needs effort. It's not something that just happens. And so the rest of my talk will be devoted to the effort that is required in the process of love. And we may ask, is love really important? And if you look at it, 99% of the world's movies, or 90%, are based on love. Maybe a few are based on violence or action, but majority of them are love. All the world's novels, the stories, right from Shakespeare to Kalidas, to everything is devoted to love. All the TV shows, a large number of them. And we find that when we talk about love, people think of love as something I need to get. Something I need to get. Not as something I need to give. Something I need to give. So I need to be loved. That is the main focus. And for that, we find that people do all kinds of things. I'm not trying to be sexist, but in the society we find that among men, generally, if they want to be loved, what do? They try to become successful. Okay, if I'm successful, if I'm very rich, or I have a great position or power, then maybe I may find the right girl. And in the case of the female, I mean, by and large, you know, she will make an effort to be beautiful or pretty or likable and so on. And so all those things are done with the idea that I want to be loved. And also both sexes, we find that they will do things like, you know, they want to be pleasant, they want to be friendly, they want to be caring, they want to show that they are worthy of being loved. So we find that love is important and everybody wants to be loved. And that brings us to the subject of romantic love. And the concept of romance and love has changed. In the Victorian ages, or in our parents' time, or even in our generation, the idea was that you met somebody through your family, and the families together got together and decided that this boy and this girl are suitable to be matched. And they based that on social situations and, you know, other factors and so on. And then when the men and women met and they fell in love, they got married first and then fell in love later. As the marriage progressed over the next few years, they fell in love with each other, hopefully. But in the modern age, the situation has changed. A person wants to meet another person and fall in love first before we get married. So first I have to meet this person and then start loving him or her, and then only marriage comes later on. And in the beginning, things are very wonderful because these two people who were separate, now suddenly they have come together and there is a great closeness physically and emotionally. They are close and all the barriers are broken, and it leads to this great infatuation and this tremendous, and I'm crazy about her and I can't live without you, and I'll bring the moon and the stars for you, and I'll do anything, and I'll never, you know, all those promises and all those songs and all that goes on. But then with this passion cannot be sustained forever. You know, when people meet for a while, they have this great, and then when it culminates in marriage, then, you know, it reaches a different level where there is now you know, the initial excitement is gone, the initial passion is gone, and now we have to now live with this other individual and manage how and how do I relate, and the day-to-day situations and problems. And those come in. So romance, after a while, gives rise to other emotions and other situations. And, you know, this reminds me of this joke. They say that in a marriage, in the first year, the man talks and the wife listens. In the second year, the wife talks and the man listens. In the third year, they both talk and the neighbors listen. So romantic love cannot be sustained forever. And how do I transfer or transmit or change this initial flash of tremendous love into something deeper and something more permanent is what we shall talk about. We always talk about falling in love. You know, I fell in love. But they say you should not fall in love, you should rise in love. Rise in love. Love should not be something where you fall or you deteriorate or you go down, but how can I, not only me, but me and my partner, how we can both elevate ourselves together. So one should not fall in love, but one should rise in love. So the term falling in love is actually wrong. So we have concluded that love is something that we need to work at. We need to master. It is an art. It is not just something that just happens, even though in the movies they describe, you know, love at first sight. They say, you know, marry in haste and repent at leisure. You know, and then they say love is blind, but marriage is an eye-opener. So how do I master the art of love? How do I learn to love? What is the right procedure? What is the right process? When we talk about mastering, it is like any other science. Say I want to master the art of medicine. So what do? I first go to college, collect all the books, go to the teachers and learn. So I learn everything that there is to know about medicine, all the books and the literature and the research. But my knowledge is still incomplete. I have just passed the exams. I have got my license. But I am not a complete doctor. I then have to go out into the field and start my practice or take a job. And then as I see patients, as I work with them, my knowledge gets translated into practice. So knowledge is necessary, but then unless you can practice that knowledge, your mastery is not complete. And it could be the same thing in music. It could be in golf. You know, you go to your teacher and take lessons, and you read the books and you watch the videos, but until you yourself go out and hit the ball, or in the case of engineer, and an engineer may know all the knowledge, but then when he or she goes out and builds a dam or builds a bridge, and then make sure that bridge can stand years, then that knowledge is complete. So similarly, in love, there is the theory. There is how I should love, and then how do I practice? So how do I love, and how do I practice? We can talk about that. Because again, as I said, love is not only a physical closeness or the, you know, or just being with somebody or living with somebody or having a physical relationship. It is involved in giving. How do I practice love? If I can give rather than receive. And it is always said that it is better to give than to receive. And so also in love, the act of, because we always think of love as getting love, you know, I should be loved by this person. But in true love, one always learns to give rather than receive. And then people say, giving means what? I have to sacrifice everything and I give whatever I can and I don't get anything in return, what is the use? And people will take advantage of me. Because we approach every relationship with a merchant-like attitude, that what am I going to get out of this? If I give $10, then I should get a shirt. If I give $50, I should get, you know. So our attitude in the world is business, that if I give something, then I should get something in return. And so also, when we talk about giving love, then we say, well, if I give, then what am I going to get in return? Is that person going to love me back? Not even more than that, if I give that person, what will he or she give me back in return? So it becomes a material transaction, a commercial transaction. But they say that in true love, it's not the material objects that you give, but what do you give? You give your humor, you give your joy, you share your sorrow, you share your innermost thoughts, you share your love and compassion. And when you give these things to another person without expecting anything back in return, what happens? First of all, that other person feels your joy, feels the closeness, feels the compassion, feels the love. And then whatever you have given, you create that in that other individual. So whatever I give to that person, I create. Like if I share my joy, I create more joy. If I share my sorrows, and not share in the sense of burdening that person, but unburdening myself, I elicit from that other individual sympathy and love and compassion. So in true giving, you actually receive everything that you have given and actually get back more. So in the practice of love, one has to constantly practice what I can give. And when you give without expecting anything in return, you actually get more back than what you have given. So true love, if you want to practice, it has to start with giving. And again, as I mentioned, it's not the material objects, but the inner feelings of love and compassion and opening oneself up to the other individual, where I and she or I and he know each other and understand each other, and knowing the inner depths of each other's true nature is the practice of love. But the practice of love is incomplete if it does not come with care and responsibility. Like a mother may say, I love my child, but if you find that she is not caring for that child, not worrying about when the child eats, or if the child is being changed, or if the child is being cleaned, or if she's out in the clubs and leaves the child, you know, doesn't care who the child is with, or what, then that's not love. We automatically say that the love is incomplete unless the mother cares for the child. You may say, I love my garden, I love my flowers, but if I do not go out and water the flowers, if I do not go out and remove the weeds and nurture my flowers, then that love is incomplete. So along with love must come an attitude of caring, where I am concerned about the other individual's welfare. How is that person doing? Is that person all right? Does that person need my help? And again, the caring should be accompanied by a sense of responsibility. Responsibility, again, we take of it as a some, you know, compulsion that I have to do it, or I am compelled to do it. It's not that. It is the willingness to take responsibility for caring for the other individual, and the ability to know what does the other person need, what are the other person's needs, what are her problems, what are her sorrows. And without that other person telling, if I am able to to share in that person's joys and sorrows and be available, that is called care and responsibility. But then sometimes responsibility may become as a domination, you know, that I am responsible for this person, so I am taking care of this person, but then I am dominating that person, that I am the dominant partner and this other person. I am controlling his or her actions and deciding what he or she should do. And that is not love. Then that becomes control. That becomes an unequal relationship. True love should lead to respect. So when I am taking care of the person, it's not that this person is useless or helpless, but a sense of love, a sense of respect. There has to be mutual respect for the love to be complete. And how can I respect a person? By truly knowing that person. Knowing, as I mentioned, not only knowing that person physically, but knowing that person emotionally, knowing that person's feelings, this person's innermost thoughts, ideas, knowing that person's desires, what does that person want, and what can I do to fulfill those desires. So I know the individual at all levels, the physical level, emotional level, intellectual level, and at the level of the innermost desires, our innermost needs and wants. So loving is a lot more than just respect, but also should go to knowledge. Where? I don't even have to have the other person tell me. And if the person is hurting, I know that. If the person is happy, I know that. If the person is sorrowful. And because people say, especially women say, you know, if you love me, you should know what I want. And men say, well, if you want something, why don't you just say it? And that is the eternal, you know, conflict between men and women. I'm sure everybody relates to that. but you know, I think one has to come to some kind of a compromise where, you know, this knowledge and respect. I think that is very, very important in the practice of love. The last few minutes we shall talk about higher love, because ultimately the love that we have talked about is at an individual level, a love between a husband and a wife, a father and a daughter, mother and a son, or love between friends. And people always seem to be stuck on that. You know, when we talk about spirituality, we say, oh, you mean that means I should not love my child, I should not love my son, I should not love my wife, I should not love my husband. And we say, no, you should love God. Oh, so that means... And so that right away people, that's the first question they ask. Does that mean I should not love people in the world? So we are not saying that one should not love... Or people say, I love my dog, I love my cat, I love my pet rock. You know, a few years ago there was this movement about they used to have pet rock and love them every... But the point is, that yeah, you have to love people and things, but then you cannot spend your whole life just at that level. I'm going to spend my whole life loving my husband or my wife or my child or my friend, because then all you are doing is just repeating again and again and again and again the same thing, and you have to transcend that love. You have to take your love higher. It's like a person saying that I'm walking on the beach and there are a lot of beautiful shells available, so I'm going to collect shells. So one day he comes to the beach and collects the shells, and then second day he comes and collects more shells, and third day he comes and he says, if I don't take these shells, somebody else will. But a wise person will say, how long are you going to be satisfied just merely with shells? Don't you want to get something better? If you want something better, you need to go into the ocean, dive deep, and there you find a precious pearl, a beautiful pearl that will make your life richer, that will make your life better. So similarly, I may love the people, I may love the things, but one has to go beyond that. One has to love something higher, where our life can be enriched, where I can make myself evolve, where I can make myself a better person. And if you just spend your whole life in just chasing after things and people, and we find in the case of these great saints, they did that. They gave up their love for their family, they gave up their love for their children. Why? Because they wanted something better. We all know the story of Buddha, where he gave up his wife, his son, and his kingdom. And you may say, well, he didn't do his duty, you know, towards his family. But in the process, he gave up, yes, one woman and one child, but then he had reached the highest truth. And when he had got that highest knowledge, that knowledge he shared with the whole world, and there are billions of Buddhists throughout the world who have benefited from his teachings. Not only that, but his wife and son whom he gave up also became monks. When they met him, they realized that this is the true path, and they absolutely had no anger towards their father, because they realized the truth of this path. We have the story of Tukaram. Tukaram was a great saint in India in several hundred years ago. And his wife was extremely poor, his children never had any money, and he had no interest in earning. He would go take a job, and while doing the job, he would totally forget about the job he was supposed to do. He was supposed to watch the fields for a farmer and make sure the birds don't come and eat. But he started singing songs of the god, and he totally forgot that he was supposed to watch the fields. And all the birds came and ate the grain, and the farmer got angry and beat him and kicked him out. And he came home and he had no money, he had nothing. And his wife said, you've been working all day, what did you get paid? He said, I got paid nothing. So we might say, yeah, you know, this person, you know, wasted his life. But think about it, in the process of his saintly existence, he composed thousands of beautiful songs. They are called Abhangas, which even several hundred years after he has passed, these songs are sung in India. And these songs are not only songs of love for Lord, but have great philosophy, great knowledge, and people have benefited. Even 500 or 600 years after he passed away, people like us, we are talking about Tukaram, you know, about what a great saint he was, and when you read his scriptures and his songs. So the point is that at some stage, I have to go beyond just the ordinary and reach for the extraordinary. I have to, again, it does not mean that I don't do my duty, but even as I'm doing my duty, even as I'm taking care of my children, I'm doing that as they are God's gift to me, and I'm serving God. And once my children grow up and they become responsible, then I spend the rest of my life in service. I do community service, I read spiritual books, I do good things with the idea that I should love God and know God. And as we have talked before, you cannot know God as an object. You cannot say I and then God as somebody else. To know Him, you have to become Him. The individual has to disappear for him to exist, because he actually is in me, he is everywhere. What separates me from him is the ego, the feeling that I am a separate individuality. But when that little ego disappears, when that little I disappears, then he appears. And that is what we find in the lives of these great saints, where they become one with him. And then when they talk, they say, I am not speaking, but the Lord is speaking through me. I am not acting, but He is acting through me. That is the true spirit of Karma Yoga, where this person's every action becomes a prayer. Every action becomes service. Why? Because the doership is gone, that arrogance is gone, that I is gone, and He is working through me. And when that total merger happens, again, the merger doesn't have to be physical. It does not mean that this person disappears or his mind becomes, but his mind becomes so full with him then there is no him and me, there is only one. Just as the river cannot ever know the ocean. The river said, I want to know what is the ocean, and picks up a book and reads, this is how an ocean is. Not going to know. How does the river know the ocean? By becoming one with the ocean. Right? And she merges in the ocean. Then she realizes the vastness. Wow. And then she says, I am the ocean. Then I am not separate. And that is called knowing. That is called. So that is the higher love. And that is what we have to aim for. That is what we have to go. These are all the first seven are how we can practice love in the world. But ultimately I have to go beyond that. And then such a person's actions in the world automatically become full of caring and responsibility and respect and knowledge. Why? Because such an individual sees himself in all. All of these people are nothing but me alone, because they are all creation of that one Almighty God. We are all one. And then automatically all these other values and all these other qualities come. It's a very beautiful subject.
This concludes this segment of Impact with Dr. Anil Mehta. Join us again next time.